Hallo und willkommen zum Media Lab Innovation Podcast. Ich bin Pia, ich bin Programmmanagerin im Media Lab Bayern und euer Host für diese Folge. Ich möchte heute mit einem ganz besonderen Gast über Geschäftsmodelle im Medienbereich sprechen. Und zwar besonders über Membership-Modelle. Man hört ja mittlerweile von allen Seiten viel darüber, dass eine Membership was ganz anderes ist als ein Abo. Und dass es dabei auch um andere Dinge geht, zum Beispiel wenn es darum geht, reine Abonnenten oder Member zu gewinnen. Um da mal einen Überblick zu bekommen, freue ich mich total, dass ich für diese Folge mit Jared Dicker sprechen konnte. Jared ist Vice President Commerce der Washington Post und hat sich da viel mit genau diesem Thema beschäftigt. Jared ist natürlich aus den USA zugeschaltet, deswegen steige ich jetzt auf Englisch um. Welcome, Jared. I'm so excited to talk to you today. Jared, you are an expert on membership models in digital media. Could you just outline for us what is the difference between a subscription model and a membership model?
So one, I'm so happy to be here too. Very excited to speak with you. So diving right in, the difference between subscription models and membership models, I think could be boiled down to very simple one-word descriptions. Subscription is a transaction. And membership is a relationship. And what I mean by that is that subscription has really become a business tool for publishers or creators to be able to charge for a product, most of the time that is content. And membership models, even though we're in early days of what those look like and how those evolve, especially in the news media business, are more about relationship. It's not a connection with the content or the product like a subscription would be, but more so a connection with the creator or the publisher or the community. So thinking about tools to build outside of just a single transaction, which would be a subscription, is how you really start to build membership models and values for your readers, your community, and the creators involved as well.
Could you just be a bit more specific? What would you say is the difference between a user that you would have in a subscription model and a member that you would have in a membership model?
So subscribers are more, I don't want to use the word passive because subscribers are clearly dedicated to the media company or the creator or the product because they are paying for access of that content. But I do think that subscriptions, to give a direct example, is also somewhat challenging for a lot of media companies because essentially, especially in news, what you're saying is that only people who could afford this sort of content are able to access it, right? And anyone who works in news media knows that the goal is to be able to open up content as far and wide as possible because it's critical for government, for society, you know, for especially in the States, democracy. So when you think about kind of the relationship with subscribers, you do build a connection with them because there is value for them to access that content. However, you are limiting, you know, your audience. And you are trying to think about other revenue models and ways to kind of supplement those costs, whether that's advertising or events or other things that are paired with it. And membership is very different, right? Membership signals loyalty. It really signals a relationship for the community to not only pay to unlock and access content, but it even sort of feels like an investment too, right? You aren't necessarily just paying for the product that exists today, but you're actually, you know, investing and paying for what you hope the creator puts within the product of tomorrow. And that just builds such a fascinating way of really kind of thinking about what products and features could be built around that. Like, what does exclusive features for members look like when they are in fact investing and committing to being part of a community, right? You think about standard things like comments. You think about ways for them to even contribute and create content of their own. But you really start to be able to evolve on what are other elements and products that I could be building for my members that goes way outside of just that transaction of content. And it's happening very far and wide outside of the media and news industry. And there's examples we could talk about. But there are also some commitments happening within news media right now that is also kind of leaning in that direction.
What are some examples in the field of media of value provided outside from content?
I think that there's a soft step and then there's kind of the harder approach that's happening. So a lot of soft stepping that's happening today that teeters closer to membership than subscription are companies like The Information. So Jessica Lessen's company, The Information out of San Francisco that covers the technology sector has done an amazing job in really providing and explaining the value of what you get as a member. And that is, in fact, the language that they use for people who are paying for their service. And the benefits are very long, right? There's exclusive events that only members are invited to. There are reports and research and documentation that could help individuals be better at their job or be more knowledgeable in their career that is only available to members. There are ways that you can engage with the community or in fact be featured within the community that is exclusive only to members. And it really does become some sort of status signaling for people who are members of The Information. It's not just about the content that they receive, which of course is a tremendous value to them, but also the access and benefits and status that they're getting as being members of that institution. You're seeing this in new media as well. The Defector, which is a new media entity that was built out of the former editors and writers at Deadspin, are doing incredibly interesting things with how they're thinking about building a new media company as it relates to membership. As a member, and there's certain tiers often, but as a top tier member of the Defector, you are the only people who are able to comment or engage in conversation. If you are not a member, you can still access some content or be a part of it. However, you cannot lean on other benefits that members would have. So really starting to kind of think about what those relationships look like and how other media companies can build off of that, I think is going to be increasingly important, especially as you think about how you're going to fund your entity beyond just the simplicity of what subscriptions are and advertising, to really figure out how your community does in fact become investors and have incentive for you as a company to succeed.
We have been talking about the implications memberships have on the users quite a bit. And I remember that in our previous conversations, we also talked about media brands becoming part of the member's identity. And I find that thought very fascinating. Maybe you could just elaborate on that a bit.
Yeah. So what's really amazing, and I guess that this is par for the course with media, where A lot of the biggest opportunities and ideas actually start in media, and then we trip over ourselves and other institutions come in and create massive, massive lucrative, right? Like game-changing businesses. I always look at like what Craig Newmark did at Craigslist as an amazing example of an opportunity that media could have taken. Of course, there's a lot of variance as to why, but I think membership is another one of those examples, right? When media was very physical, particularly print, holding a newspaper was an identity and was a status symbol. You would walk around with the Wall Street Journal, and, you know, of course, your intent was to read it, but there's a reason why people folded it under their arms. There's a reason why people chose to expose it, because there is a sort of status and identity to being a Wall Street Journal subscriber. The best example for newspapers that I love to use is New York Times blue bag. That bag, even though it was just a wrapping so that your newspaper wouldn't get wet in the rain when it's sitting on your doorstep, became a status symbol, right? Having that blue bag meant that you were a subscriber of the New York Times, and however you want to categorize what that could mean, each individual has their own feeling, but it was something that was more meaningful and more valuable to that reader than just being able to access that content. And as we've moved into kind of the digital space, and as media has sort of tried to figure out their identity and their relationship with readers, which has, you know, been very much disrupted by platforms and how distribution now is being executed outside of, you know, media companies' control, there's kind of this association conversation happening right now, which is, okay, like, what does status and identity look like for a Washington Post subscriber or a New York Times subscriber in this new age? And now we're sort of looking at other industries that are doing this very well. Our owner, the Washington Post owner, has another company you may be familiar with called Amazon. And Amazon has created an amazing membership model for people who are Prime members. And being a Prime member isn't just getting two-day shipping on your packages. It's also getting access to free movies on demand. It's being able to get discounts at Whole Foods grocery stores, which are big grocery stores in the United States. But there's a sort of status symbol and some sort of benefit involved with you being a part of Prime. And media has a huge opportunity to really think about what that could look like. Because again, what's old is new, but what's new isn't necessarily gone. And we're seeing that there was a lot of status and identity and value associated with these media companies, especially when they were physical goods. And how can we really think about taking that digitally so that people can have that association, have that value? And I think that that goes beyond just, you know, a blue bag or a sweatshirt. I think that it has to do with participation, what it means to be a member of a community, what sort of benefit that gives you. And there's a ton of kind of workings and products happening throughout the space that are kind of leaning in that direction.
Before, you mentioned Craigslist, and you said that there were possible opportunities for media companies involved in that example. Maybe you could elaborate on that a bit further.
Absolutely. I mentioned kind of what Craig Newmark did with Craigslist, because when you look at the businesses that used to drive the media industry, one of them was classifieds, right? And what I think is interesting is that I often say that legacy kills the dream, which I don't know is fair to say to media companies. But what I mean by that is, I think that a lot of the businesses that accrue within a media company over decades and decades, right, because a lot of news brands are 100 years old, inhibit them from being able to kind of see too far in the future and leapfrog certain opportunities. And Craigslist is a great example of reimagining what classifieds should look like from a user experience and being able to build a portal that is functional and beneficial to both consumers and the creators, and extracting that from the medium, which was newspapers, and kind of bringing that into a new platform and putting forward a new approach. You've seen that multiple times, like LinkedIn is a great example when job boards were kind of one of the bedrock businesses of local news, right? Is that you'd be able to look in the newspaper and find job opportunities. And there were platforms built around that, right? Community is another one. So I think that it's very easy in hindsight to say, wow, media companies should have seen this. They should have built the Craigslist for classifieds. They should have built the Facebook for distribution. They should have built the Google for searching content and building databases. But in fact, I think that it's not necessarily so much a missed opportunity as it is just how media companies are structured and what they're able to maintain with their current business and what they're able to build for their future business. And that kind of introduces a whole kind of heap of opportunities for challengers, right, that are coming in, because challengers don't have the legacy baggage or business that needs to be maintained. They're able to look at it with kind of a beginner's purview and with a fresh set of eyes to say, okay, based on where we are now, this would be a great angle for us to build in, rather than, yes, we know we want to build in this angle, but we have to accommodate all of these other things. And membership will fall into a similar boat, right? And going back to what I said about media companies used to be very strong at membership. There used to be status, identity, and benefits tied to your relationship with that creator and the community that was since lost and taken over by other sorts of platforms that I think now we have the opportunity to learn from and somewhat bring back, which is why the Amazon example makes sense, which is why other sorts of commerce companies that think about membership and what it means for you to be able to easily kind of like consume content, engage, purchase, and how we kind of bring that back to our, you know, traditional, more traditional media entities.
Can we maybe take a look at the product? Like, do you think that a membership model has any implications on the product? Like, do the editors write differently now, maybe? Because if you were involved in a conversation with your readers, that's what you would assume, right?
That's a fiery question. that's a fiery question to say, should business influence journalism? So I do believe that business models drive product strategy, whether we realize it or not. Where media, especially news media, has its value is that it is church and state, right? That we are creating content that journalists are focused on the purpose and delivering information to the community that they need to hear, unbiased and uninfluenced by kind of what's happening from brands or business models. However, you know, to kind of flip that, when you think about what the membership product could look like, absolutely does it really start to change the way that we think about writers and the relationship with the community. A great example would be kind of what's happening with Axios. So Axios doesn't have a membership model, but they've essentially set up their media company as a way to be able to have individual writers have direct relationships with their community. So every writer within Axios's vertical, Sarah Fisher writes the media vertical. I wouldn't necessarily know what Axios's media vertical is besides that Sarah Fisher writes it. And same with Dan Primack, who writes for technology, and Kendall Baker, who writes for sports. And I think when you start thinking about membership models, as we bring it back to, say, an example being the Washington Post, you could think about what a relationship means to a reader and how they actually build that connection with that reader. And that could be, now, instead of being a member of the Washington Post, I'm now a member of an individual writer. And as a member of that individual writer, I get access to her content, but there's also all of these other benefits. Maybe there's exclusive events for members. Maybe there's ways for me to consume her content or follow her production outside of the Washington Post as well. But it'll significantly influence the relationship between the creator and the reader as it stands today. It'll also change the way that the product works for that individual reader themselves. So right now, the reader logs in order to access content. The reader will now look at their membership as a sort of portal, a way for them to be able to do multiple different tasks, multiple different activities within, you know, the, let's just say in this example, the Washington Post arena, where they are really focused on how do I better engage community? What are other services that are currently being offered to me? What are ways that I could contribute and build a deeper relationship with the platform that I'm currently a member of? I think that that's another topic that we can go wild on, which is right now with subscription, it seems very one way, right? I am a publisher, I produce content, a subscriber unlocks and engages and reads that content, and that's sort of the end of the relationship. Whereas when you think about what membership could really be, they are contributors, right, of that platform. They feel an investment and they feel an incentive to better that platform, to contribute to that platform. And you start to really see it become like a literal community where people feel like they are a part of this success, that they want to contribute any which way they can in order to build that brand and build that value. And out of that will come a bunch of different products. Could be things as simple as enabling communities to create content, or it could even go steps further, which is really being able to say, well, how does my membership of being a Washington Post member, what does that mean for me outside of the Washington Post? What is access I get to other publishers? What does it mean for my relationship with brands? And that's an amazing opportunity for us as a media company to really start thinking about what we should be building for our members that gives them value and access all over the web.
What, in your opinion, changes for the journalists now? If you stop seeing a journalist as just a creator and seller of content and start seeing them as a community builder, how does that change the role of the journalist, in your opinion?
I firmly believe that it's kind of, from an industry point of view, I think that it is as important as ever to make sure that journalists aren't necessarily influenced by by kind of this new relationship and new model. What I would say is that how, like, the conversations around how journalists have been building their own brands, especially on Twitter, and their own relationships with readers on those sort of platforms, has been a fascinating kind of view into what this future could look like. The first step of this future, which is probably the most kind of obvious now, is what's happening when individuals really want to kind of venture and build their own brands and manage their own relationships and essentially become, you know, what I'm calling the business of the individual, but go independent, right? So there's platforms. You're very well familiar with Substack, and, you know, Medium has been around for quite some time. And there's things in the podcast space and the video space that has really started to enable individual creators to be able to go out and build a media company around themselves. It's been fascinating to watch because I believe that the original kind of intent or interest for these creators was to basically say, look, what I'm doing now has been very successful, and I built a great community, and I built a great audience, and I've essentially built a great brand around myself, that I'm going to just go and do that on my own on one of these platforms, whether it's a Substack, which is a platform itself, or, you know, creating a WordPress or a MailChimp or any of these other kind of distribution engines. But what's been amazing is that these creators have started to realize that, wow, 90% of what I'm focusing on now is figuring out how to build a business, right? Before, I was writing, I was producing content, I was engaging community. Now I have to figure out finances and audience development and distribution and all of these other things that haven't necessarily been kind of like built right within my skill set, or in fact have been educated upon within, you know, the companies that I used to work at. And that's been a fascinating thing, right? Because I do think that when we think about membership and the relationship with readers, how membership looks when you are a larger media company, which is essentially a lot of creators under a larger brand umbrella, versus when you are an independent individual media company, i.e. like Jared Dicker or any person, I think that the models change. What I would say is that I think there's a lot to learn from what the independent creator community is doing right now around membership. They are, unlike larger media companies, really forced to figure this out quickly. A lot of them are consumer revenue based. So they're not running advertisements, especially if they're running on Substack, right? There is a direction being led that, you know, consumer revenue is valuable. You want to build that relationship with the consumer. And watching them figure out how they differentiate themselves, you know, amongst their peer competitors is fascinating, right? Like, how does being a member to my brand versus your brand differentiate beyond just the content that we're producing, and what can we be doing that could be more valuable in order to better engage and better interest that? With larger media institutions, revenues are diversified, right? There's advertising value, which is, you know, the relationship with partners that I'm more bullish on than ever, that I think media companies will continue to grow and expand there. There's the idea of what membership could look like. So there's more of, I'd say, an evolution of what membership models look like from the individual approach. And that's happening a lot more aggressively and faster than what we're seeing at larger media institutions by way of the business model, again, driving their product strategy and their core focus being building a relationship with the community, building a consumer revenue engine, which means how can we start to think about membership in the grander scheme of things and start to put product and value together.
I think that might be a good segue to get into the practical a bit more. Maybe you could just elaborate a bit on the steps that, especially if you are a company that is currently running a subscription model and you wanted to change it into a membership model, what would those steps that you would recommend be, or what would the components be that you would be looking at?
So a really simple way to think about it is kind of going back full circle to what I said in the beginning, right? If subscription is a single transaction around content, right, then kind of the innovation there doesn't necessarily have a ceiling, but you don't really need to further develop that, right? There is value in that transaction of content and really being able to get smart and kind of methodical around how to better that and deliver that and drive, you know, free users down the funnel to subscribers starts to become more of a mathematical game than, let's say, like an innovative game. On the membership side, right, it's not thinking about how to better the product for the publisher, right? How do I get more subscribers? How do I create content or drive users down the funnel in order for them to transact on content and subscribe? It starts to become a community tool, right? So where the roadmap for a subscriber could be, okay, how does a publisher get more subscriptions? A roadmap for a membership is what can we build for our community that gives them more benefits and more like tactics and tools to be able to use here that they can't get elsewhere. So when you think about that, there's a whole different sort of roadmap, right? That's completely differentiated from what's being built here versus what's being built there on the membership side. Some practical examples that I've been thinking about is as a member of a community, right, you really want that to be your identity. And as your identity, how could that be used elsewhere? Some things that I've been thinking through is, okay, like if you are a Washington Post subscriber, or let's say, you know, a New York Times subscriber, then that email is essentially your identity and that membership is also your identity. So there should be ways for you to be able to leverage that outside of what's happening, let's say, on, you know, the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or the Washington Post. And there's very interesting ways to kind of think about that, i.e. like if I am engaging with a brand, right, let's say Intel, off of one of these platforms, then there should be a way for me to be able to leverage my membership to be able to get a discount or be able to get access. If there is, let's say, a joint partnership between a large media company and like an artist or a musician, and there are tickets being sold, right? And those tickets are accessible like elsewhere. I should be able to use, right, my membership to be able to drive that value and be able to kind of get perks or opportunities that others can't. And I think what's really interesting when you think about that connection is that the work isn't just happening on the tools and products that are built for the community. It's also happening on the relationships and the brokerage of what's happening between publishers and brands and publishers and, let's say, like other partners. So today, right, when you think about revenue models for a media company, you're really thinking about monetizing your platform. You're saying, okay, we want to be able to drive partnership and advertising dollars on this media platform, or we want to drive subscribers on this media platform. Well, when you start to think about membership and how people who are members to a media company can use that value elsewhere, now conversations with a media company and an advertiser are basically saying, what can we build outside of this media publisher environment that allows for some benefits and exchanges for this community to use elsewhere?
Could you maybe be a bit more specific? What was that process, this change for you, like working at the Washington Post? Can you just maybe give us a bit of an insight? What were steps that you took? What were insights that you gathered, just historically speaking?
At the Washington Post, I feel like there are dominant media institutions, especially within the States, but also globally, where membership has somewhat become innate with kind of subscriptions. So I think you hear a lot of terminology, right, when you talk about people who are subscribers, right, or members of a media institution as supporters, right? Like, we support this, we believe in this, right? And you're essentially like getting those sort of sentiments of investment within this institution because you want this institution to continue creating content, to continue going. I'd say that as we have kind of thought about different ways that we can build beyond that, I'd say that we've been lucky to have a very strong subscriptions business and a very valuable subscriptions business where we haven't necessarily been forced to really start to think about what are the additional kind of membership opportunities that we need to lean on in order to help drive that business and drive that value. Our content has been very valuable as kind of like a standalone at this point. So a lot of the things that I was kind of mentioning as to what we should be building from a membership point of view are things that we're currently discussing and thinking about rolling out. There are a bunch of like beneficial products that have been built in order to better drive that membership. Personalized newsletters was one, right? We found that people really wanted a digest into kind of the content that was most relevant to them. Again, the value of newspapers is that you are paying for editorial curation and the value is there, but also being able to really start to think about how you drive more personalization for members based on things that they are interested in and the value there is important. And that was one sort of product and initiative that was pushed forward there. There are also a lot of things that we're thinking. So I run the commercial group at The Post, and we've built a software as a service technology called Zeus, which now powers over 45 local news organizations throughout the United States, but we've signed on 90. So by end of year, it'll be 90. And what's really amazing there is that our revenue software is now powering all of these like very critical media institutions. So Dallas Morning News, the Seattle Times, the Sacramento Bee, all of McClatchy Properties. And what we've been able to start talking about there is, what does revenue and membership look like, not just within a single entity, but across all of these other publishers? So I think like it's early days there, but what's been amazing with trends is that we're starting to see media companies go beyond what they used to do before, which was very like, our business is our walled garden and we're going to focus on our company and we're not necessarily going to go elsewhere, to now media companies sharing software, sharing kind of strategies and focus, and starting to think about what are unique things that we can build together, which I think is an amazing opportunity. Again, like, we're thinking about it first when it comes to advertising and when it comes to revenue. But as we start to like etch into what it could be for membership, the opportunity to really be able to start to define these things, not just for a single entity like the Washington Post, but what it can mean for, you know, all of local news is insanely exciting.
I couldn't agree more. Just maybe like, let's just get a bit deeper here. In your opinion, does reach play a role when it comes to monetization, or is it just closeness and relationships all the way?
I love that question. So I don't know if I coined this, but I've been told I coined this, is that niche is the new scale. So what I mean by that is that no, reach is no longer critical, I'd say, for emerging media companies who are thinking about membership, right? I think scale is very valuable when it comes to an advertising point of view, of course, because, you know, you want to be able to monetize that. Brands are looking for reach. That is why Facebook and Google are just the largest advertising companies on the earth, because they have the most scale and they have the most reach. I'd say scale is important for diversifying revenue, right? If you are thinking about how to drive ad revenue, if you are thinking about how to drive more free users down the funnel, right? There is a value in scale, but some of the most interesting, at least membership companies that I see today, are all niche companies. So one of which is Industry Drive, which is really focused on a particular area of business where they have a advertising model, they have a membership model, but it isn't about scale. It's about like niche audiences and understanding that audience and how to better monetize and engage with them. Because what happened with scale, right, especially when it comes to revenue, is that scale generalized the value of every publisher's audience. So instead of like looking at the audience's first party data, right, which is like the information that a publisher collects that is unique to them, right? Which is kind of could be audience, could be interest, anything that could be surveyed or shared through consumption data. It was all third-party data. It was all data that was stitched together through the web. And when someone would want to target, you know, an audience, let's say on like the Washington Post, they would want to target a specific audience profile rather than, let's say, a Washington Post reader. And now things have changed, right? There's a lot of things that have happened in the overall kind of web ecosystem, mainly, and again, this is a whole nother topic that you probably may be discussing at Munich Days, that the third-party cookie is going away, right? So the way that advertising works on the web today is completely going to change with a deadline of 2022 by Google Chrome. So now there's a huge shift towards how can you drive value out of your first party data? How can you better understand your audience? What makes them unique? And now when you're having conversations when it comes to membership or when it comes to advertisers, it's not here's the flat fee cost of what like via CPM of what it's going to cost to target this audience. It's now this is why my audience is valuable. And if you want to advertise against them or engage with them as a brand, this is what it's going to cost. And that puts a lot of value and power back in the individual creators, back in the publisher's hands. Again, it's scary because it's changing the entire way that we've known media to date. That's why you asked the question, scale was the game. And now we're essentially saying, no, better understanding your reader base, driving more value is critical. And when you think about membership, right? So like really to round this thought out, in order to get information from readers that is going to be valuable in this next phase of media, which is first party data, no cookies, you have to have a value exchange for them to want to log in, for them to want to be a member, for them to want to engage and contribute information so you can learn about them. So the emphasis of building products that gives them that value, that makes them feel like they're a member, that enables them to contribute is critical, right? It's not just critical for building a consumer revenue business like membership or subscription, but it's critical for even building an advertising business. So all eyes are kind of focused on really trying to figure out how you build that value exchange, which really makes membership so much larger than just the idea of, okay, how do we build a better relationship with our readers? It's essentially the bedrock of how we're going to get that exchange that's going to be a core pillar of all existing businesses that happen across media.
To wrap this up, do you have three main takeaways for us, for publishers or for startups who want to make money with membership models? What would your three takeaways be?
So one takeaway is talent, right? So we're kind of seeing this. I don't think it's necessarily a shift. I think it's more so a spotlight on the value of talent. So one big takeaway is when you think about your media company and yourself as a media company, think about yourself as a talent company and what you should be setting up and building in order to attract, cultivate, and, you know, develop talent, because that's going to be a core part of the business. The second thing is really trying to build a value exchange for readers or any customer that you may have that puts value on their wanting to log in to participate. I think that there's like top 10 companies in the world that will continue to be able to grow based on subscriptions, you know, as like a transaction of content. And I think like, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal are them because that content is critical. But these emerging companies or existing companies should be thinking about membership, right? How do I not just build a connection for my reader with the content, but build a connection for my reader with the creator and with the community that they're existing in? And that's something that I think is increasingly important. And again, anyone listening to this podcast now has a one-on-one as to what they should be doing or how they should be focusing on that. The third thing is that I do believe that diversifying revenue models is more important than ever and should continue to be every media company's focus. What I'm seeing right now in the individual creator space is that everyone is leaning on subscriptions and membership, and they're ignoring the value of advertising. You know, advertising is a $100 billion business. Right now, a lot of that is living in Facebook and Google, but brands are amazing. Brands are amazing partners, and advertising is the ability for people to access information across the world. Without advertising, everyone would just be getting the information that they're paying for, right? Or people who couldn't afford it wouldn't get it. So really being able to understand how to diversify your models, how to think of how those throughout the funnel could each benefit one another and really build businesses around that. So those three things I'd say are critical when you're building in an existing or starting a new media business.
So thank you, Jared, for this exciting talk. I think we learned so much about how valuable memberships can be and how we can like practically make it happen. At least I'm totally inspired. So thank you so, so much for being with us today and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. I had such a blast and amazing conversation, and you have an awesome day too.
Damit ist diese Folge des Media Lab Innovation Podcasts auch schon wieder zu Ende. Noch weitere Folgen findet ihr überall, wo es Podcasts gibt. Mehr Infos zu Medieninnovation gibt es auch auf www.media-lab.de. Beim Media Lab Innovation Podcast findet ihr außerdem noch weitere Folgen, die sich mit dem Thema Business Models beschäftigen. Und natürlich auch zu ganz vielen anderen Themen rund um Medieninnovation. Hört doch mal rein. Bis bald, macht's gut und bleibt innovativ.